I'm Andrew O'Hagan, host of a new podcast from the London Review of Books. It's about the bloodiest and most controversial event of the Falklands War, the sinking of the General Belgrano. Margaret Thatcher was accused of a war crime. The truth would only emerge in the pages of a private diary. This is the Belgrano Diary. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the London Review Bookshop.
It's been written of Olga that she is a devotee of Jung, and it's been written of myself that I'm a devotee of Freud. So we know Freud and Jung, they started off good, but then they had a big fight and they never spoke to each other again. But I'm hoping we can do better than that. And this is what Olga has to say about writing. In flights, anyone who has ever tried to write a novel knows what an arduous task it is, undoubtedly the worst way of occupying oneself. It's a controlled psychosis. That really made me laugh.
And do you agree with me?
Well, I was going to ask you what you mean.
Controlled psychosis. It means for me that we are overwhelmed by ideas, figures, voices, which are growing in our head, in our minds, and we have to manage with those energies or voices. And then from the other side, we have to also to live in a regular, normal life. So there is a very big and very deep split between those two realities. And sometimes I have to shake myself to come back. I'm really, when I'm writing, really, I can spend 12 hours sitting at the computer. So sometimes I'm losing my feeling of reality. But anyway, in the end, till this day, I always coming back. So.
I agree. But everything that's written about us isn't necessarily true. Are you a devotee of Jung, and how do you put myth to work in your novels? Because the interesting thing that you do is to find new myths. Mm-hmm. I just wondered about mm-hmm. your relationship mm-hmm. to myth.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I'm from the very beginning, when I was a child, so in the age of 10, I think that it was important time when you really, this is the entrance to literature. So my first step was to go into literature through myths, from mythology. There is a very big title in Polish literature, wrote by Parandowski. He collected all myths, those myths are rewriting in a very nice, simple way. So for children, those lectures very, very good, very simple. And then I had a time that I felt really overwhelmed. I was grew up in not religious family. Mm-hmm. So now, from my own now perspective, I think that mythology was also something treated as a religious, very important. I could see word as a collection of heavenly energies, in a way. So I tried religions, mythology very seriously. In fact, I remember myself praying to the gods of winds, for instance, in the garden of my grandfather. So I was pagan a little bit as a child. And then when I started to study psychology, that was communistic time in Poland. So I expect that I will study Freud and Jung and so on, but it wasn't possible at the time to study such a psychology. We had very strange Russians psychology, which now everybody forgot about it. And we spent our time with training rats in the labyrinths and so on. So I was a little bit disappointed. But then, during my study, I opened up like my private studying. And then I discovered Sigmund Freud. And what was most interesting for me in his writing, the possibility to perceiving reality as a something which is open for endless number of interpretations. Mm-hmm. So that was this fact opened my mind for writing, for thinking about the world. That this is now from nowadays point of view, it is very postmodern, I would say. But I found it out as a young girl in Sigmund Freud's books. And then, because Freud was too scientific, I think, for me, I was kind of poetic mind. Then I found out Gustav Karl Jung, and then I, drowned in Jung. That was a very good beginning for writing. I think that you agree with me. And now it would be my advice for students, creative writing, just to please read Jung just for a short time. To also to be aware that the container with mythology is a kind of vocabulary of many things which are happens now and in the completely with completely different faces and in different shapes, but we still are swimming in the same swimming pool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So also for somebody who doesn't have any enough good inspirations, you can always put your hand into this swimming pool and take off something. Oh, like you mentioned Medusa myth. This is one of the strongest, beautiful stories, in fact, so moving. Now I'm a little bit farther from Jung, but I'm really thankful, grateful to him to meet him on my way.
Absolutely. So to follow on from that, here's a strange question. It's clear to me what your psychology training, which is I know you've had to talk about forever. It's clear to me what it's given your work, and what's so incredible about Olga's novels is that it doesn't tread its heavy boots through the work ever. It's completely embodied in all of the work. But my question to you is, do you think that your psychology training took anything away from your writing?
Took away from my writing? Interesting. Everybody asked me about influences.
I know. Uh-huh. It's a hard question. I tell you what I'm thinking about. Sometimes I think that when I started to read psychoanalytic literature, I didn't have to pass any exams. It was just for pleasure. I was in the when I had children, I was in the playground for 12 years, and I just got interested in the way these adults and children behaved. And so I started to read Freud. Mm-hmm. And when I think, if I was to answer the question, I wonder if it's made me a little bit too compassionate, too kind in my writing. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would be fiercer, mm-hmm. angrier, more ignorant. That's not always such a bad thing. Mm-hmm. So that's where my question comes from. You know, I think maybe it gives so much, and maybe it takes something away too.
I don't know. I have to think what its psychology takes away from my sensitivity or ability of writing. Mm. But I, that I was very interested in literature from the beginning, and then my first idea was to go to study literature. But my mother is a Polonist, so she's working as a teacher, not now, but, and I was in conflict at the time with her. So I didn't repeat her way, in a way.
Yeah.
So I decided to go and to do completely something else. And then the first lesson during studying psychology was that we can perceive reality from many points of view. I remember myself that once in the studying like a therapeutic house, when we were trained to be therapists, one of my first client, who was also the student, we learn ourselves on our, as a couples, you know what I mean, że się trenowaliśmy na sobie.
So you trained each other.
Yeah, we trained each other. And then he told me the story of his family, and he told also that was his brother at the same group, and the version of the how the family works was completely different. So one brother used to describe the situation of the family, that the father was completely different stories, and then I couldn't understand how it is possible. And then I think that was very good idea to study psychology to discover that reality is something endless. This is like a building with endless amount of rooms, which in fact there is such an expression in Talmud: the world is the building with endless amount of yeah. So. And the second thing which I owe to psychology, it was we were trained to listen people and to pay attention on body language, and to treat every single client as a entire narrative from the beginning to the end. So for me, when I started to write my first debut book, I was sure that every human being is the book. And so there are 4 milliards of books on the planet Earth, and then you can choose the history narratives, history of anybody, and write a beautiful moving novel.
Yeah.
So that was very very nice and literary lessons I took from psychology. But that, after all, it was a very bad negative lessons. When I started to work as a therapist, and once I realized, talking with my client, quite very deep discussions with him, deep process, I realized then that I'm much more neurotic and much more zaburzony,
disturbed
than my client. And that was the moment I realized to quit.
I think it's good to be neurotic as a writer.
Yeah, of course.
What's the point of being calm?
Do you know any psychopaths writing the books?
No. So that flight into realities and out of realities is something that you explore in all your work, and in a really great short story I read of yours published in Bomb magazine, and. What's the title? It's God is Making the World.
About drugs.
Yes.
Yeah.
God is Making the World, and he's having an argument. His neighbor says, I think it's a little too gaudy and shabby, this world that you've made. So you're hearing all of this in translation, I know. But it's published in English, and it's out there on the internet to find. And God says, no, people don't like too much reality. Mm-hmm. Very good line. We don't really, do we? And that seems to be something that you really put to work in so many ways, political ways, historical emotional flights to reality and out of it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So before we get on to flights, which is what we're here to celebrate, I wanted to ask you Marguerite Duras, French writer, said that no one can claim to be an intellectual if they have never read any books by women, or if they've read just very few books by women, because they don't have enough data. They just don't have enough information.
About the world.
About the world. So I think you agree, mm-hmm. nodding. But here's a question to you. I know that we would enjoy to have this conversation alone with a glass of wine, but I thought I'd air it with an audience, bring an audience in. If I was to ask Philip Roth, what do you think a male perspective in your books has contributed to American culture? You'd all think this was a really strange question, because this we would have sort of assumed that this is the culture. So there was a part of me that decided that I would never ask another female writer that question, that it was more subversive, you know, not to ask that question. Now, do you think that's just a utopian idea, or whether I should always ask that question?
Utopia?
Yeah, do you think that, you know, that would be progress to, would you want to be asked that question?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. So tell me about that. How has that gone down? How has that gone down for you with your readers and in Poland and around the world?
I think that the level we write novels, we think in an artistic way, this is the level of our mind, of our psyche, or whatever it is, of our personality, which has no sex.
Mm-hmm.
This is something which is very common, and we can share this level of our personality with another human beings, I would say. And my entire ability for writing is taken from this level. But of course, on the higher level or lower level, I don't know how what is the structure, hierarchy, but on the level of reality, when I am sitting here and talking with you, of course I am woman, and my world is much more womanish than the world of my husband. So the second thing, that I have a very strong feeling of justice. So I see this world as an unjust in a very many aspects. Mm-hmm. So my writing with a strong
machiskim. Emphasis?
With the strong emphasis on a womanish side of life is taking from
feminine, może.
Feminine, yeah. Feminine life is taken from this more social level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that every single person is on the kind of level is without no sex. Or I could say that everybody we have the same sex. And then but being social, being living in the reality, we are divided into sexes, and then we can face to this situation. And for instance, with the feeling of justice, I realized to writing this Jacob's book, which is the recent book of mine, I had such a situation that the history, that my entire research, which were taken from archives and libraries, full of gaps, because I didn't have records about women figures in this entire story.
Yeah.
And what's more, I decided to to create using my imagination much just a stronger figure of women than I would do with male figures in this book. So this is all the main, my main motivation is the feeling of justice. Why some people can go into history on the red carpets, like men, kings, mm-hmm. fighters, you know, and so on, and entire people just disappearing, melting somewhere in time, and women in a majority, in the big majority, are melting. In my research, I noticed that the women's are mentioned only by relation to their men, so mm-hmm. like a wife or mistress or I don't know, sister and so on, without names, without their own stories. So in this sense, my writing is a feminist writing in this new and this contemporary course. Understanding.
Of course. So it's an interesting question, you know. It would be great, wouldn't it, not to, in some ways, I often feel, to be asked that because the pleasure of writing is to make everything as complicated as it is. And what you do so well is to gather conflicting thoughts and digressions, and catch them mm-hmm. with perfect cadence, the cadence of a poet. And the story is going to take as long or as short as it needs to. We can wait for these intimate digressions. So Olga is writing in the third person and then the first person. And in relation to this, I wanted to ask you, sorry to keep saying it has been, you know, to quote interviews, but this is what I've had to do to interview you tonight, having discovered your work. You've said that in Poland, it's critically looked down on to write a plot-driven novel.
Mm-hmm.
It's not everything we say is that's said about it's us isn't really true.
Yeah.
So I know. So that's why we all need translators all the time. Is that right?
It would be right. It was rather right in the like 10 years ago, 20 years ago. But now I have to mention that the perceiving literature in Poland and in Great Britain and in entire Anglo-Saxon English language culture, civilization is different. What we envy you is this kind of bourgeois middle class literature from 19th century, when the people are meeting, drinking tea, and they are very polite and exchanging, you know, nice mm-hmm. words and beautiful conversation, and so on. But we during the history didn't have such a time to create such a literature because we didn't. Our time for creating middle class was so short, and the middle class was destroyed during the war.
Yes.
And then, you know, the history in Central Europe is nightmare, as you know. So literature is always like a flower, you know, blossoming mm-hmm. on the ground of history. So our history is different, and our literature is different. So in Poland. Because the Polish language is very plastic and not so rational and not so much more poetic, if I would say, because my English, as you see, is not ideal. So in Poland, literature is much more connected with beauty of language, with poetic of language, mm-hmm. But the telling story from the beginning to the end with all those very classic forms is not a something which is important.
Very good.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, that love of the bonnets and the tea is just a mask for brutality mm-hmm. of going to colonize the world.
Uh-huh.
Everything is about a cup of tea.
But you have, for instance, very beautiful, great tradition of dialogues, mm-hmm. which I always envy you. So I think that this is Shakespeare things, that Shakespeare is so strong in your thinking about the world and describing the world, that you can do such a book like In a Wolf Hall, for instance, which is completely connected with dialogues. This is impossible in Poland.
But perhaps the difference is that in dialogue no one says what they mean, that, mm-hmm. that we never speak directly.
We just use words to dialogue
mm-hmm. to cover up and to say something else. So you say, "Would you like 3 sugars in your tea?" "Yes, please." And I want to put my head in the gas oven. This would not be this would not be dialogue unless you know.
Yeah. So this is a high art of dialogues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
We have poetic style, atmosphere, climate. Irony, which is very mm-hmm. something very important in Polish literature. We have surrealistic, you know, yes. tendencies. Yes. And it's also the Polish literature is like staying on the border between absurd and rational. Mm-hmm. Realities. I don't know how to say. So it's not so easy. I know that a new generation of writers in Poland, they would like to write in this classical, like a global way. Global means English language literature, okay. Anglo-Saxon. I think that this kind of specific Central European literature will disappear sooner or later if the global world will be in the good shape. So I think in the next 100 years everything will be written in British and American way.
Oh, I hope not. I don't think so. Not with you around. No, I think there's plenty of irony and parody and contradiction and humor in our so much literature. Just to come back to flights, because you now are flying back to flights because it was published in Poland in 2008.
Yes, even earlier, I think.
Even earlier, yeah. So we get used to this, you know, as books get translated.
Do you have the same when you have the book translated? In 10 years later,
it's a strange. How does it feel to return to it?
So I have to spend some hours to just recall what's going on in this book, because I have to prepare myself to talk about the book.
Yes.
Because in between it was 2 another books. It was Detective Story, which was filmed recently. So I also, you know, was very present in this promotion of movie, and I was very active.
Yes.
And then Jacob's book, which took like 8 years of my life. So, mm-hmm.
yeah.
But flights, I still think that everybody of us, I mean.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why UnitedHealthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Writers entire life look for a form. I don't know mm-hmm. if you have the same. Mm-hmm. It's this ambitious idea to find a form which will be like a beautiful tailored dress. It's very sweet to be exactly for me, not for another authors, but very private form. And I think that Flights, this is the book which is very private in form. I invented the form from the beginning to the end. I called the form constellation novel. I was able to defend this kind of novel. So I think that that was a very important point in my thinking about about writing,
because it's a formal but intimate conversation with the reader. Now, just explain to me. I've got a bit confused with all the titles in translation. So that it's called Runners, or is that something else?
I think that's the same thing.
Okay. Antonia, you can say anything.
Well, I was the first person who did some extracts from this book. And the title in Polish, Bieguni, is taken from the name of the sect, isn't it?
Yeah, in Russia.
It was in Russia. And Bieg means, is the root for run.
Yeah.
And and I researched this sect in English, as Olga had it in Polish, and I found that they were called the Runners in historical books in English. So I called it that. But then Jennifer, who has translated the whole book, Jennifer Croft, who wishes she was with us, and she said that, but she's thrilled to this, very pleased. Jennifer came up with this different idea, and I can see exactly why. It makes a great deal of sense, because the book is about escaping from yourself, in a way, in directions which take you as far away as possible out into the world, and also escaping inside as far as you can go deep inside yourself. So there's extraordinary journeys going on in this book in two odd directions.
Outside and inside.
And having the sense in the title of escape, I think, is very clever. So runners away from something. Quite gives you that. And the speed of it. Very nice, I think, this time.
Excellent. So in Polish, the title refers to a Russian sect.
Yes.
Could you say a bit about that?
Yeah, with pleasure. Because I was, during my writing this book, and I still didn't have a title. And then I found myself in Moscow, in Russia, and I have a very good guide. My guide was a philosopher. Specialist from Russian philosophy and also from Russian Orthodox heresy. Mm-hmm. So he showed me the city, the Moscow city, as a collection of places connected with religion, with Orthodox Church. And he mentioned first time about such a sect, and they believers. They are convinced that only movement can protect you against evil. So everybody who is stable, immobile, will be very soon a victim of a devil, and evil. So we have to move all the time, also in physically. Meaning and psychological meaning. Mm-hmm. We have to be in move, because then the devil couldn't catch us as a victims, as a. So and then I don't know till now if it was a joke or just I had a kind of enlightenment in the tube, Moscow tube, because he showed me people traveling in the tube, and they had entire life with them, you know, in the plastic bags, the kitchen and the food and clothes and so on. And they were traveled, you know, from one station in the end to another station, just living in the tube. And he told me that this is the contemporary model of Bieguni, of this sect. And I was really shocked. And then I understand that this is that I have a metaphor. Because now all of us in this world, we are Bieguni. We are traveling, moving people, because there is no way to. If you stop, you will die. In fact, you have to do every single day something more. Be in move, and you know, So then, this day I realized that I have a title of the book, Bieguni. Of course, this is quite difficult to translate the word, because the word has a context, and it's hard to. Put this context, and
so in the 10 years of that 10 years have sort of caught up with your book, because the whole world is in flight.
refugees fleeing war, and then attempts to stop flight, to block the entry of people on the move. So it kind of goes, it's a strange time for your book to land, as it were, all these years later. You start quite near the beginning. The narrator is 7 years old, and she's looking at a river, the flow of a river. Do you talk about that? Mm-hmm. She says, "I'll remind you." She says, she's seen the water flow, and she has a strange thought. She says, "It's so much better for something to be flowing, to be moving." She has a philosophical, mm-hmm. existential thought, mm-hmm. at seven. It's so much better to be moving than to be stuck.
Stuck. Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, this book is only one book in my career which is partly autobiographical, because I think that people before 60 shouldn't write their biographies. So
before,
I still have some time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this time when you travel, because writing this book, I was really traveling,
yes.
Moving.
Where are you?
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. so there is only one stable point was my own personality, my own biography. This is very interesting. My own body. So if, when you travel, you are like a boat in a way, you know, that you have to take care of this boat, of your body, to just be on move. So the big part of this book is just reflection, just digressions, mm-hmm. connected with human body, how mm-hmm. hard it is, how how strong and how can be preserved for how long time.
And body parts, because you have Chopin's heart smuggled out of Paris by his sister under her skirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is true that his heart was brought back.
Yeah, this
Warsaw.
Is a story Andrzej Walda told me once. Yeah. They asked him if I can use it in my book, and he agreed, so I have copyright. this is a true story, really. This is a story about when Frédéric Chopin died in France. And at the time, it was a very hot time in Europe, because Poland was under the partition, and occupants were in Poland, and so on and so on. So the Polish people decided to brought back Chopin's heart to Poland. But of course, they had to smuggle the heart. The heart, I mean, in a jar, the glass jar that was a piece of meat inside. So how to smuggle this strange thing back from Paris to Poland? And the women invented the way. They had a crinoline. And this is a huge space for smuggling under the crinoline. This is a very female smuggling, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So they one of them, they put the jar with the heart of Chopin, and happily came back to Poland. And in Poland, the heart was burned in a very, very official way, patriotic atmosphere. So it sounds completely absurd, but it was true.
Yeah, and then the Minister of Culture said that Chopin's heart was aching to return.
Was aching to return?
It was homesick,
uh-huh.
aching to return. So you have returned it in another way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shall we have some questions from the audience?
I
know that many of you want to have questions to ask.
Hello, Olga. We met briefly earlier, and I'm your British publisher.
Yes.
It's,
no.
It's, It's wonderful to meet you.
So you did this surprise that I came here to this bookstore.
Yes.
And I didn't know that the book will be here. I expected the book in May, so
No, it was very important to have it for your visit tonight. Something we haven't really talked about is the book is so much about the body and human anatomy. And I wondered, how did you decide to juxtapose travel and this writing about the body?
It's risky, don't you think so?
Well, risky, but brilliant, obviously.
It wasn't just a fully conscious choice. It was rather my experience during traveling, that what I just said a minute ago, that if you are endless movement all the time, because during writing this book, I really during two years were traveled like hell, trying to, I don't know, to change my life, to escape, and I don't know what. So naturally, those thoughts about my body, my muscles, my wnętrzności,
intestines,
were coming to my mind, because I think that this is a kind of psychological process that you perhaps connected in any way with narcissism, perhaps. If you are just swimming in the endless oceans of stimuli, then you have to keep something which is to be aware of something which is, you know, only yours and very stable. And then I thought about it. How it is possible that we know what's going on moon, that we know, then we have a maps of moon, but me, I don't know, I don't have a map of myself from inside. Where is my stomach? When is my liver, for instance? How it looks? How I can communicate with my own body? What can I do with my body to stay for longer? My body is so fragile. It is the most fragile thing we can experience in our lives. So it was naturally juxtaposed to for traveling. So I didn't even, that was not that I invented this opposition just to have a very good space for writing, but it was very natural. And I really, to the end, I didn't know if it is really good solution for the book. Writing this book was doing a very risky sport like bungee or like I don't know what. So
because?
I didn't know the end.
Okay. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, that's exciting, isn't it? Not knowing the end. So Leonardo da Vinci, he makes an appearance, and of course he was obsessed with flight, always strapping on his inventions and going to the top of a hill and flying down. And then when Freud wrote his psychobiography of Leonardo da Vinci, he said, oh, who is Leonardo flying to or from? He said, it's his father who abandoned him.
Uh-huh.
I was quite disappointed, actually, at that conclusion. Then something that stuck with me in Flights is a very small section of it where the narrator goes to a hotel and the guy in reception, he says, here's your key. Everybody loses the key to this room. And would you want to talk about that?
Yeah. No, do you want me to talk about this special key? Or to
losing that key that everyone loses.
Because when you travel when you are on the move all the time, so our mind, I think, would like to keep, to catch something and keep. And then we had a tendency to perceive reality as a full of meanings. Mm-hmm. This is a kind of like a very slight paranoia that everything is meaning. I don't know if you had something. It's always take place when you are in love on the beginning, you know, that the word is meaningful. It's, oh, he said something, oh, I don't know, he sent and he texted me something, and it means much more that it is written in the text. So this looking for meanings is, I think, is a very important part of our being a human being. So, to be lost in traveling, to be lost in the world, we are very hungry for such a coincidence. This is also very Jungian. He named this process, he named this phenomenon, and then, this case with Key is one of them, one of such a looking for meaning, for sense. Of course, perceiving from the other side is completely just a przypadek, jak jest?
An accident,
absolutely. Of course.
So what happens is that this particular key to room 9 is always lost, and you're told, do not lose this key. And what you do is you don't return it. You sort of manage to go off with the key, and somehow it's the one part of the book that really haunts me. Mm-hmm. That's that story. I was wondering. I think it's in House of Night, House of Day. Is it in that order?
I think it's
House of Day, House of Night. Is you have this incredible character called Marek. Mm-hmm. And he's his mother's angel. He has white hair. His father beats him. Mm-hmm. Then he starts to beat other kids and sometimes his father. And he drinks. He becomes a drunk. And you mentioned that he has a bird inside him. But when Marek drinks, the bird doesn't get drunk. Mm-hmm. The bird's always there, alert, waiting, feeling, mm-hmm. feeling for him. And that the bird's eyes inside Marek show terror, are terrified when Marek is terrified. And that the feet of the bird are tied up. And I thought, maybe Olga has untied that bird inside Marek. Mm-hmm. Maybe you were waiting to write flights in some way. But then there is a confusion with translations of the title. But this bird it would be nice to think the bird flew out of Marek and became a book called Flights.
I don't remember, to be honest, I don't remember the end of the story.
It's very bad, I think.
Ah, okay.
A few more questions from the floor.
I have two questions. Yes. One question is very, very easy and very simple, which is, I wanted to ask you, which is your favorite book of yours? And but I don't ask you this question. My question is, which is your favorite character you created? And the closest to you? And I was thinking that I will ask it because you were saying that the Flights were the book that was inventing something poetically for you. But isn't it that actually the House of the Day and the House of the Night is starting the poetics of kind of little stories put together, divided, mm-hmm. and this is actually the beginning. And the character there, the female character, the narrator character, is really close and kind of, isn't it her that is back in Flight? So this is a little bit leading question, but okay. My question is, who is your favorite character you created? and the other question was, I actually thought about it when you were discussing the title, The Runners, and indeed, it is a sect that believes that there is the only in the movement, in the migrating, and in there is escape from sin. And that's all right. So we have to move to escape being sinful. And in the flight, you're inventing a character that is in the movement all the time and trying to find and looking around the world. But in this, in flight, in the book, you are actually implying that only when she is coming back and when she puts the passport to the shelves, only then she creates and she writes. So isn't it writing sinful?
No, I don't agree.
Yeah, it is, isn't it like this? Oh, maybe I misread it.
So, which question first?
Favorite character. It's okay. A not so easy question. To be honest, every single figure in my book and every single character is me in a way. When I study psychology, there is such a theory which uses the term of multiply personality. This is also the
disorder.
And but this psychological theory told us that it is not should be illness. This, we function like this. We are a collection of personalities in our inner space, and every such a personality has a specific potential to be grown and to be bigger and to be really social and to take us over.
Yeah.
So I think that those kind of writers like me, they are multiplied personalities. So I it seems to me that sometimes I can take from inside such a figure and I like put a life into it, and it's growing sometimes without not asking me in which direction. And for instance, Marta, or old woman telling the story or be very present in this world, sometimes it's seems to me that she is the kind of myself as a kind of alter ego, or I don't know, even like a inner twin. Sorry that I'm so introvertic now and like a clinical, or I don't know. But so I'm using from myself all those possibilities and building up my figures on myself. But of course, not to the end, not everybody, because finally I can also based on observing another people. Sometimes I'm very carefully looking at people, I don't know, in tube or in social situations, and just taking some features like collecting mushrooms, this, and in building a figure.
Oh, you like mushrooms with sugar.
So
yes, there are many recipes for amazing recipes. I think maybe writers are superstitious about naming a favorite character, because those characters have to step out through the work into the world and have their own life in your mind, and for writers, the characters are there to do something, to chase arguments, to figure something out with, to work something out. And I think it is very interesting the way that, in a sense, we are all our characters, a little like a dream, where we are everything in the dream, so that we are in our male characters and in our female characters and in our objects and in our animals, in everything.
Writing is moving in a very metaphorical sense. Every single day you have a... You are in move from... Yeah, writing, you are in the move.
Yes. So I'm just going to read, I think it's a good end actually, because this is about writing. And it's how we began and it's how we end, which we like, I think, as a structure. Yes. So I'm reading from Flights. I'm reading from Jennifer Croft's translation.
Anyone who has ever tried to write a novel knows what an arduous task it is, undoubtedly one of the worst ways of occupying oneself. You have to remain within yourself all the time in solitary confinement. It's a controlled psychosis, an obsessive paranoia manacled to work, completely lacking in the feathers, pens, and bustles and Venetian masks we would ordinarily associate with it. Clothed instead in a butcher's apron and rubber boots, eviscerating knife in hand. You can barely see from that writerly cellar the feet of passerbys, hear the rapping of their heels. Every so often, someone stops and bends down and glances in through the window, and then you get a glimpse of a human face, maybe even exchange a few words. But ultimately, the mind is so occupied with its own act, a play staged by the self for the self in a hasty makeshift cabinet of curiosities peopled by author and character, narrator and reader, the person describing and the person being described. That feet, shoes, heels, and faces become, sooner or later, mere components of that act. I don't regret developing a taste for this odd occupation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this London Review Bookshop event. For more, visit our website at www.londonreviewbookshop.co.uk or search for the London Review Bookshop on iTunes.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.